the guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It's just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself and Jay are joined by Chris Jack to look back on the opening day victory at Inverness. Chris, welcome along.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys. Long time listener, first time caller. I think that's the protocol for these kind of things, isn't it?
That was good. That was the first radio cliche that we've had in the podcast, so I like that.
It's only because of over here in Northern Ireland, I don't get Radio Scotland in the car, so I've been having to make do with the Clyde One phone in the last couple of weeks on the way home. This has got to be better than that somehow.
I would hope so. Chris, you made the long journey on Saturday. An excellent opening to the season, a 1-0 victory, and it certainly could have been more.
I definitely think it could have been. I was looking forward to the game for a number of reasons. Mainly, it'd be the first game I'd been to since the fixture in Inverness last season, where we get dubbed. I was at 3-1, a Yama squad up there. I was prepped for the start of the season. I was a bit down in the morning, I must admit, when I woke up to hearing about Rowdy Roddy Piper passing away. So that put me in a bit of a downer for the get-go. But getting up to the game and seeing us take the lead so quickly into the match, just kind of perked everything right up. And it was probably, I've seen a lot of displays over the last year or so, but it was definitely encouraging to see such fight and such fitness more than anything in the team. And the fact that we pressed them for so long and barely allowed them out of their own half in the first half, I was really pleased to be seeing that. And then, as you say there, it could have been much more, I think, if McDonald scores the penalty. Then we want to get maybe 4 or 5 in that game. I've got no doubt about that.
Jay, I know it's early doors and you don't want to get carried away, but how significant do you think this win is, given the team only won 3 games in the road last season for the duration of the season? So it does feel quite significant to open a league campaign with an away win.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you even just factor in the fact that there was a bit of a rebuilding process needed during the summer, then of course players are going to come in, have to bed in, get settled, particularly when you've got a number of new strikers. So you're looking at guys like Wes Fletcher to get off, to get on the mark pretty early on in the season, because these things can drag on. You know, if we'd went there and get beat, and then you get Dundee United next week, we've got quite a difficult start to the season. So, you know, you want to get points in the boards. You want to get, you know, some new players settling in and playing well and getting confidence. So it's definitely a really, really good start. And I think what impressed me most was not just the victory, but the manner of the victory. You know, I think it was 8 shots on target to their 0. I mean, to go to any away ground in the top division and come away with a record like that is fantastic. So if we can keep that going, then yeah, good things are ahead this season.
Chris, a number of debutants on Saturday. Wes Fletcher opening his season with a goal. I know it was a tap-in, but again, followed it in, put it away, and that'll be a real confidence boost for him too going forward.
It certainly will. I mean, from seeing some of the highlights of the pre-season games, you know, the goals that he has managed, was it one or two that he got? They were sort of, you know, tap-ins, very similar to the goal that he got on Saturday there. You know, the goalkeeper's parrying a shot from someone else and he's just in the right place at the right time. And I think without John Sutton in the team, who, you know, has been a sort of a penalty box poacher, we're always going to need someone to, you know, mop up and put away the scraps. And by all accounts, Fletcher looks as exactly the kind of player that we need for that. But I think as well, not just his play in and around the box, but just with his back to goal, you know, the way that he was bringing the ball down, taking a couple of steps against these defenders and bringing others into the game. You know, there was a couple of times, more so in the first half, where he was out on the left-hand side of the box, bringing the ball down his chest or in his inner thigh, and bringing the likes of Chalmers and Hamill into the game. And I think there was even the short 8 minutes just after his goal, where he turned the defender on the edge of the box and shot just across the goalie. You know, he seems to just have that thing about him that, you know, we've not really seen it in a lot of Motherwell forwards or number nines anyway, for the last few seasons. Obviously Higden and Sutton have done some great jobs for us, even going back to Chris Porter as well, but he just seems to be just that little bit. He's got good feet about him. I know that that's maybe a cliche to say, but the way that you know, he was bringing others into play, the way that he had confidence in himself to bring the ball down and around defenders, it bodes well for him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Scott McDonald links up with Fletcher. Fletcher seems to be a bit more of a physical presence up there, and from the way that Ian Barraclough set up on Saturday, McDonald might play slightly deeper. I don't think he'll move as far back as he played in the relegation playoff, but do you see McDonald perhaps moving a bit further back? Just maybe it's a result of being later in his career as well, I suppose.
It'll be an interesting one just to see how that pans out, because, you know, I remember when McDonald actually signed, I think there was, you know, chat about one of the reasons they actually wanted to leave Millwall was because he wasn't being played up front and that he had been played more in an attacking midfield role. So it'd be interesting to see whether McDonald would be happy with that. But he certainly did, you know, particularly in the playoffs, he did such a great job there that it's hard not to at least consider him as an option for that position. Of course, it all depends. You know, it depends whether Fletcher goes on and cements, you know, the first choice striking role is his own, or whether, you know, you've got so many strikers that can come in and take that place off him, you know, Moult and Clarkson. So, you know, it's interesting. It's great to have these options. It's great to have this dilemma that you don't really know where players are going to fit in. You don't really know who's going to be given the nod. And it means that, you know, even if McDonald is played further behind the striking position, if he wants to be there, then he's going to know that he's going to have to score goals. He's going to have to make it his own. So it's just it'll be interesting to see how it pans out, to see if McDonald is played there. Because as I said, he seemed to have a few reservations about that down at Millwall. But just to be in this position where, you know, we've got off to a great start, but we've got some really good options there, where, you know, anything could happen. You could get a knock or a suspension, and you've got somebody just ready to slot in up front. So it's a good position to be in.
In a day that performances were of such a good standard, possibly the only blot in McDonald's copybook, Chris, was his penalty. I never felt particularly confident from the minute he stepped up.
To be honest, I was hoping he was going to pass the ball over to Fletcher. I had him, I chucked a pound in 251 for Wes Fletcher's hat trick. So after the start that he made, I was hoping it was going to be Fletcher that was going to be taking it. But for a striker at McDonald's standards, it's probably arguably the worst penalty he'll ever hit in his career. The fact that, you know, is it Fawn Williams, the Inverness goalie? The fact that, you know, he actually had two attempts at bringing it into his body because it was so close to him, it shows just how poor a penalty it was. But I'm sure he'll kick on. I mean, he'll do much better things this season, and he'll probably end up doing much worse things this season as well. But I definitely think, you know, if he had scored that, the tails would definitely have been up, and it would have been the catalyst for a wee bit more. But I think we were probably expecting, you know, that that's that penalty save to galvanise Inverness and, you know, maybe push them on a little bit to try and get back into the game. And that was what really surprised me about it, was the fact that they just offered absolutely nothing. Because obviously, you know, as you mentioned, you know, looking at the opening day performances, you want to see everyone performing as well as they can, get a gauge of everything. And I think with the new goalie, Conor Ripley, a lot is, or certainly within my group of mates, and we were keen to see, you know, how he would deal with the shot stopping side of things. But he never even got that opportunity at all. I mean, it looked really good coming for crosses and things. His distribution was a bit patchy at times, but you know, it would have been good to see him maybe, you know, have a couple of wee fingertip saves or even having to dive in a ball or something. But Inverness were just the only poor and never the only troubled them.
Jay, that was a big talking point amongst the guys that travelled with us. On Saturday, Ripley going straight into the side. A real sore one to take for Dan Twardzik, who has been the victim of a new goalkeeper coming in last season with George Long, and then again right away. It must have dented Dan's confidence, but looking at it from a more positive frame of mind, Ripley was very comfortable in his debut, and to start with a clean sheet, you can't ask for much more than that.
It's certainly an interesting one because, you know, again, like Twardzik in particular is a player that quite clearly divides opinion. If you go onto, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Steelman Online, even just amongst ourselves, or even just on this podcast, because we know Buster's not his biggest fan. But, you know, he's a player that divides opinion. But I think that when you're talking about a player's confidence, when you're talking about risking that confidence, I was very surprised that Ripley started, you know, having just joined a day before. If we'd brought in, you know, a more established first-team goalkeeper that's, you know, experienced and has played in the SPL, etc., then I could, and he'd been signed particularly to be the number one, then I could perhaps have understood it. But I think to have Twardzik in goals for the majority of pre-season, you know, I didn't go to any of the pre-season games, but by all accounts, you know, he did well. I think there was one in particular that he was the reason that we didn't concede a number of goals. So I think to give him a pre-season, to have him, you know, essentially prepare for the game, I would imagine he would have spent the whole week preparing to be in goals at Inverness. And I think that when you've got a young goalkeeper, I don't know whether it's, again, we don't know, we're commenting from the outside, but when we spoke about it on, I think it was on Friday, just after Conor Ripley joined, you know, I made the point that I would have been very surprised if he started, because it's a risk to Dan's confidence. And the issue is, if Conor Ripley comes in and doesn't do a great job, which we you know, Inverness, we're so lacklustre, we still don't really know. I mean, if he comes in and doesn't do a great job and you're then looking to Twardzik to come in and replace him, are you going to be replacing him with a goalkeeper whose confidence is utterly shattered? Because, you know, no matter what he does, someone just comes up the road on loan 24 hours before we start a season and replaces him straight away. So I was quite surprised with that. I would have been more content to go with Twardzik. Yes, he's got his faults, he's got his detractors, but I think I would have been more comfortable going with Twardzik. You know, saying you've had a half decent pre-season, you've waited for last season for to get a chance again, particularly under Barraclough. You know, that jersey's yours to lose in the first couple of games. And then, by all means, if your plan is then to introduce Conor Ripley once he's been in the squad for a few weeks, then do so. But, you know, I can't imagine it will be the greatest feeling waking up on Saturday morning, having prepared all week to open your season in goals and find out you've been dropped for a guy who presumably barely trained with the first team.
I think as well, just on that, with the whole Twardzik thing, it's been talked about at length on the forums and stuff over the last couple of years as well. But I really think that, you know, the likes of Gavin Randolph and John Ruddy have really kind of skewed Motherwell fans' opinions of what a Motherwell goalie should be. You know, for as long as I've been going to games up until the likes of Ruddy and Randolph were here, I can't remember ever feeling confident in any goalie that we've had. You know, since the likes of Stevie Wood, Scott Howie, Miko Cavan, going all the way up to, you know, through Gorham, even with Colin Meldrum, that kind of thing. And since, you know, Randolph and Ruddy, now both Premiership goalkeepers, I think we need to kind of reel ourselves in a wee bit when it comes to our expectations for goalies. I feel that Twardzik has been a bit of not a scapegoat as such, but he's had a rough time because of that, because obviously he came in the season after Van Dolf left. He was having to sort of, or he was brought in to kind of clean up the mess that Lee Hollis and Gunnar Nielsen had created between themselves. He looked good for five or six games, went back away when his loan finished, and then we got him full-time in there. And he was never going to live up to those high expectations, even those ones that he'd set himself in those six games where they had performed well for us. So it's a shame that he has that he's came to us at that time. You know, maybe if he'd had more of a run at Dundee, where he was establishing himself more, when he did eventually come to us, you know, he'd be a more rounded goalie. But as you said earlier on, he is just a young keeper. And he was going to make mistakes. And a lot of the time last season as well, he was hung out to dry by the defence so many times that he was saving us in games. Maybe not saving us points, but certainly saving us from even bigger margins than what we were losing by. And I think, you know, just from looking at Ripley on Saturday, he looks like a Premiership goalkeeper, which is something that Twardzik doesn't. I mean, Twardzik's only maybe 1-2 inches shorter than him, I think. But if you look at the two of them side by side, you know, you can see that one of them is, you know, someone that's came through as a product of an academy somewhere. He's built, he's tall, he looks commanding, and that's what Twardzik doesn't have about him. As good a shot stopper as he is, and he's probably as nice a guy as he is, sometimes you need to kind of throw all that kind of sentimentality out the window, and you need to go with your best pick on it. And I think from looking at Ripley, although we've not seen him in any action as such, he carries the same kind of clout and the same kind of swagger as what Van Dolf and Buddy had. But we need to sort of keep ourselves grounded with it and think, you know, he might look the part, but, you know, one-on-one with Charlie Telford next week against Dundee United, is he going to, you know, perform as well as what Twardzik does in one-on-ones? Or is he just going to, you know, show the reason why he has been a backup at Middlesbrough and things like that. So it's too early to tell how well he is going to go, but I think overall we just need to sort of keep ourselves grounded with him regardless of how he performs in his next game, because we don't want to build him up and then, you know, 3 weeks later on Steel Men Online he's getting his legs chopped out from underneath him.
Yeah, I suppose that it was always going to be happening that we were going to sign a goalkeeper. I think Middlesbrough were perhaps a wee bit reluctant to let him go if it was the case that he wasn't going to be getting game time. So maybe there's an element of that involved in the deal. But you'd certainly hope that if he does turn out to be a nightmare, which I really don't think he will, to be honest, but that we're stuck with him until January and he needs to play every week. But I think, as Jay says, waking up on Saturday morning and realising he wasn't in the team, I think that could be the final straw for Dan. I'd be surprised if there's not even a wee bit of reluctance to remain at Fir Park due to the manager clearly not fancying him as a first-choice goalkeeper.
We'll see. I mean, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, I can completely understand if Barraclough has looked at Ripley and thinks, right, you know, this is going to be the number one for most of the season. I just think that, you know, to bring in a goalkeeper that late and you know, it's not sentimentality, it's just, you know, man management. It's, you know, nurturing the confidence of your players. And I think that it's quite a tricky position because if anything happens to Ripley, you know, if he has a bad patch or he, you know, he's the last man and gets sent off or he gets injured, then Twardzik's going to have to play. And if you've shattered his confidence early on without even giving him the chance to, you know, throw away that number one jersey, then it's a tricky situation. And as Chris said, you know, Ripley didn't have much to do on Saturday, whereas Twardzik was let down by his defence repeatedly last season, regardless of what you think about his ability as a goalkeeper. And so that must have made things even worse. You know, he's prepared all week. He's dropped from a game that he assumed he was starting. His confidence is shattered. And then he gets to sit there and watch, what the hell is this? You know, they've not even got a shot on goal, whereas all last season, my defence was utterly shocking. So it must have just been an absolute nightmare for Twardzik all day on Saturday.
I saw you getting a no clean sheet bonus as well, given that Ripley didn't have to save a shot. One other talking point that came out of the Inverness game, Stephen Pearson's tackling Gary Warren very poor from where I was sitting. He was just slightly slow, very like his tackling in Kenny Miller in the playoff. But it looks like Pearson's come out pretty badly as well. scan results due on Friday, but there was a few people intimating in the internet forums could be up to 4 months out. Jay, that's a massive blow if it turns out to be the case.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've said for weeks, as has, you know, the club, as a Barraclough, that, you know, the goalkeeper and the centre mid were the two positions that we now needed to fill. We're still, you know, we're still no further forward with bringing in a centre midfielder. So to then lose your first choice or one of your first choice central midfielders, it's a difficult position to be in. On the challenge itself, I thought it was a poor challenge. You're right in saying it's something that he's done in the past. I don't think it's malicious. I think it's just, you know, sort of a player who's a forward-thinking, essentially a winger who has, you know, found his feet at central midfield. I think it's just that kind of, you know, attacking player, Paul Scholes, not knowing how to keep his feet down kind of type challenge. But it was a grim one. And it will be a big loss if he's out, regardless of who we bring in, regardless of who is waiting to, even if we, you know, we go with Jack Leach or Cadden or somebody along those lines, it's still such a big, big loss because he's been a really important player for us since he came in January. And he was, you know, a big part of us staying up last season. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how we respond to that. Whether, you know, Jack Leach for me would be a good choice because I think he had a really good promising spell in the team. Obviously a serious injury has ruled him out for a while, so if he can come back in and find the, you know, find that form that he was showing, you know, against the likes of Celtic when he was man of the match, etc., then, you know, we should be okay. But it's now, if signing a central midfielder was not already a priority, then it definitely is now.
Yeah, let's hope it carries on to deadline day though, JF, after we're new plans. I think we're nearly ready to announce we're special moment for the podcast going live for deadline day. Chris, you're more than welcome to come over from Northern Ireland to join us for it. We're expecting.
I'll see what I can be. I'm definitely trying to organise to get over for a few more games this season than I managed last year. But I do have the added bonus of having a wee girl coming in October this year, so that might put a kibosh in things sort of after Halloween time. But certainly, you know, I want to see as many well games as possible this season. And I certainly want to see us play against more teams than Inverness, because I think the last four games I've been to, it's either been up in Inverness or it was at my last home game. Last time I was at Fir Park was the home game against them at the start of the last season. So it'd be good to see another team for a change.
Looking ahead to Dundee United on Saturday, Jay, I know you're chatting at the bit to see the team in action after being away last weekend. It was, as Alan Burrows pointed out in the podcast last week, it was a very hard start to the season we've been handed, but the confidence levels are turned up a wee notch after Saturday. They lost a sore late goal against Aberdeen to lose 1-0 on Sunday, so I really fancy our chances. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, it's a home game. We've got the confidence from the week before. Again, it'll be interesting, you know, depending on what happens with Pearson, how that plays. But, you know, Dundee United are a side who I don't know. I mean, they're obviously at the top end of the division most seasons. But under McNamara, I've never been, you know, overly impressed. I think that a lot of the success that McNamara enjoyed when they first came in terms of challenging, you know, for Europe, etc., was down more to the players who were already there rather than, you know, the likes of Mackay, Stephen Armstrong, etc. And now that those guys have gone, I just, you know, I think McNamara has been found out a little bit, you know, in terms of replacing them. So we're definitely playing Dundee United as you know, as good a time as any. On the back of a good win. And you're right, you know, they had quite a sore defeat against Aberdeen. So there's no reason not to be confident going into the game. A home game, hopefully there'll be a half-decent crowd, that being the first home game of the season. And yeah, the only sticking point for me will be how we respond to Pearson being missing, if indeed he is. But other than that, I see no reason not to get into the game, expecting that we can get something out of it.
It'd be a massive boost, of course it would, Chris, to win our opening two games. United at Fir Park, it's always a tight game, isn't it? And I don't expect it to be much different on Saturday.
Yeah, I think the fact as well, you know, as we've spoke about, we've had so many players come in and they're still bedding in and trying to find their feet in our team, and they did that to a successful point on Saturday. But it's the same with United as well. I mean, although they've not made an awful lot of signings, a lot of the players that will be playing for them on Saturday might not necessarily be players that we were used to seeing last season. Certainly, you know, Bellati didn't get an awful lot of game time last year, although he did score an absolute screamer against us at the start of last season. But again, he's one of the players that he's been about for United for the last season, but no one really knows too much about him. Obviously, they've got Anya as well. I don't know how. I didn't see any of the game on Sunday there. But I don't know if he was in their squad for that. And then, again, it's just the youngsters coming through as well. So I think you're right in saying that, Andy. I think it will be quite a tight game. I would hope that we would have the edge, but just purely by the fact that we'd get that momentum from our opening day win there. But again, you know, we've had opening day wins for, I think, the last four or five seasons. We have pushed on the majority of the time, apart other than for last season. So it should bode well. It's one I'm going to have to look forward to. Or I say look forward, I'm going to have to look at Sports Scene on Sunday night to see how the game pans out, as long as they give us more than 2 minutes worth of highlights like they did this week. But I'm confident that we'll get something from it, even if it's not a win, as long as we put in a performance and show you know, some more positives, or build on the positives from Saturday past, then, you know, I'd be confident of the 3 points, if not just the one.
Jay, we've talked about new faces coming in. One guy moving out of our park, albeit on loan, is Craig Moore, who's headed off to United until January. He slowly fell down the pecking order and obviously hampered badly by his injury last season. I've said before, I think it's a make or break season for Craig Moore. This move could be pivotal, and how he performs may affect his future. We could have seen the last of him. It's so hard to tell, but I think at least this guarantees him some game time, which is crucial at his age.
Yeah, I think that when we were obviously talking about McDonald possibly coming back in, I think we were all in agreement that if he did so, then Craig Moore would have to go on loan, because, you know, it'd be so far down the pecking order there that chances were going to be so limited. I think it's an interesting one. I mean, it's just the fact that I was looking forward to this season because there was so much talk about the young players getting their chance and youth being the future. And it seems that is still the plan, but a lot of the young players are ones that we're going out and bringing in. So, you know, the likes of, you know, Wes Fletcher's still young, Lou Moult is still young, etc. Lou Lang's obviously joined. So I'm just wondering whether, you know, the plan is to give young players a chance to have youngsters in the squad, but that we're doing so with players that we've went out and signed rather than our own. Because, you know, even the fact that we've brought in we've got Johnson and Ainsworth there. You know, I know Ross McLean, Cadden, etc. were in and around the squad, but, you know, is Dom Thomas going to get more of a chance this year, or is he going to find himself really struggling to get in front of Johnson and Ainsworth? Moore, again, I think I would have been happier with Forster. Obviously, it's hard to not be happy with McDonald signing, but, you know, would we have brought in Louis Moult, for instance, had we already known McDonald was going to sign? It just seems quite strange that we're bringing in these players to kind of replace the young players we've already got, the young players that we expected to be getting a chance. And so, yeah, I do agree. I think that Moore going to Ayr, it's good that he'll get game time. I've got no doubt he'll score goals. But, you know, I think there's a chance that, you know, now that Bob McHugh has left, that Craig Moore is going to take up that mantle and kind of just be that young player that hangs around for a little bit, gets a chance here and there, and then kind of just vanishes. So it's an intro again. It's you know, I was expecting guys like Moore and Thomas, etc., to be more, you know, to be going into the season and expecting them to be more of your starting lineup than they actually already are.
I think as well there, Jay, when you're saying about, you know, the amount of time that Twardzik spent in goals in pre-season as well. Again, from the highlights that I saw there, Craig Moore seemed to be involved in pretty much all the games as well. So I thought, you know, he'd have been doing a great service to himself by putting himself in Bathercliff's vision for the season. And I think, you know, for it to come, you know, it was, what, 1-2 days before the season starts for them to get farmed out in loan. You know, he might have found that a bit tough as well. The fact that, you know, he's been busting his gut in pre-season to make a mark in the team, but ultimately he has been papped back out to air.
I know, I totally agree. That was one thing I noticed as well, the fact that Moore seemed to be involved quite a lot, which, given as pre-season went on more and more, it became more inevitable that McDonald was going to sign. It seemed a little strange. Again, it could just be that Bathercliff was, you know, judging these players and giving them a chance to impress, and then as soon as we went into the new season, he's decided, right, they're not good enough. And obviously, you can't really comment too much on the man management and how Bathercliff actually talks to these players in a private environment. But from the outside looking in, I do agree. I think, you know, Twardzig and Moore playing such a big part, two young players possibly thinking this was their chance. You know, again, after all the talk about how young players are going to be so important and going to be a big part of our future, I think to then get to the start of the season and one finds himself dropped for a player who signed on loan, you know, 24 hours before, and the other farmed out to Ayr United as fifth choice striker, it does seem a little strange. It does seem as though, you know, we are going with youth, but it has to be youth that we've went out and handpicked from other clubs rather than players we've brought through.
One other thing that kind of last bit of news, I suppose, from this week was the League Cup draw, which we'll see is travel to Bayview for a tie with East Fife. Jay, a ground I've never visited, I intend to go, and hopefully we can kick on in the Cups this season. It's a wee bit of banana skin, I suppose, but we should have enough to get through.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm presuming it's still the same ground. I've been to East Fife before, and I think they beat them 1-0. I think it was in the League Cup. Pretty sure Stephen Halliday scored, of all people.
Oh, well, it's new Bayview now, isn't it?
Ah, right, is it a new ground? Well, I've never been to this one. I think if you're Motherwell, you have to just basically accept that every single Cup game you ever play is going to be a potential banana skin. But in saying that, I think that we can go into the cup competitions with maybe a little bit more optimism this year, just based on the, you know, just how good a job Bathercliff did with handling the playoff games. And I think if we can get that same sort of mentality and same sort of spirit going into one-off cup ties, then, you know, dare I say it, we might actually get a half decent cup run at some point this season. But we'll need to wait and see. It's definitely a tie to kind of look forward to. And again, that might be the kind of game that you see the likes of Dom Thomas in.
Chris, you must hope for a special moment in the Cup this year.
I think, you know, I think Bathercliff was saying in some of the pre-season stuff, and even Alan Brothers last week was saying, you know, how special it would be, you know, in our anniversary year to get our hands on a Cup. And with it being 25 years since 1991, it'd be good to do it as well. But, I mean, we went through all that roller coaster of emotions back in 2011 as well, when it's 20 years since we last won the Cup. And I remember the build-up to the 2011 final. It was just daft, because it was just when, you know, the players and all that were on social media. You know, Jamie Murphy with the hashtag believe stuff. And that was doing the rounds, trying to get celebrities to retweet it, all that kind of thing. And it did really create a bit of a buzz that few Motherwell fans of our generation had felt for quite some time since 1991, albeit in different circumstances. But a cup run, it's something that every team wants. You know, it's something tangible. It's something that you can always remember. I mean, that's the one big thing that I think. In McCall's time, and the team that McCall had assembled with us, it's the one thing that would just maybe push them just that wee bit higher in everybody's estimations. You know, as good as finishing best of the best and second and getting Champions League qualifying games, at the end of the day, there's nothing to hold on to from that. It's just the memory you have. But having a cup, having a medal, having something that you can display in a trophy cabinet, as opposed to, you know, just the second rung in a league table on the BBC website, it's just something that's that little bit more special. and it creates more memories for the fans as well. And as a team like ourselves, that you know, we're going in this direction where you know we're wanting to bring more fans in, we're wanting to get more exposure for our young players so we can sell them on and make more money off them. You know, seeing them in cup runs, seeing them playing big games at cup finals, and seeing how they adapt to that. That can only be beneficial for the club. You're talking there, everyone before we came on about special moments and things. I think seeing Keith Lasley in his testimonial year of all years on the anniversary of the club, 25 years after their last Hampden victory, seeing Keith going up and lifting the Scottish Cup, it would be a moment to savour for our generation of Well fans, definitely.
It was very good that you brought that up there, Chris, as well, because that is one thing that I've not mentioned and is really worth discussing, that Keith Lasley's testimonial has been set for the start of September. Jay, a fantastic servant to Motherwell Football Club, and he remains to be a fantastic servant, all-round good guy. It's one that you hope the fans get along to it and support his big day, because he certainly deserves it, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's been the odd testimonial over the years that has been a bit of a disappointment in terms of attendance and things like that. You know, these are the players who actually give you the great success or the trips you want to go on and the goals, etc. You know, these are the players that give you what you want every week. So, you know, hopefully it's kind of disappointing when fans don't turn out for testimonials for these kind of players. So hopefully it's a success. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be. Great servant. I think he's the kind of guy who will always be associated with Motherwell to the extent, you know, in years to come. You wouldn't really be surprised to see him involved in the management side or something along those lines.
Without sort of fanboying too much about it, I think with the cult status that Keith's garnered at the club over the last 5 years, I would expect it to be probably one of the healthiest turnouts for a test we've had in recent years. Obviously, with Stevie Hamill's testimonial against Everton a few years ago, which was a decent crowd. And again, that was maybe swelled a wee bit by the fact that Fabio was back for that game as well, to see his old pal. And then you had Stephen Craigan's testimonial as well against Partick, which all the action was pretty much done in the first 3 minutes in that game. And again, it wasn't a particularly large crowd for it, because it was, it was only Partick that we were playing against. But I think with the stature that the Well fans hold Keith Lasley in, I think it would be a great night for them. And again, you're mentioning, you know, about how he's never going to be far away from the club. The amount of times that, you know, you see his wee boy and his wee girl as the mascots, you know, he's clearly got a big family affinity for Fir Park. And I think it would be a disservice if you know, there wasn't the right amount of Well fans to go and show their appreciation to him on, is it the 5th of September?
I think it is the 5th, but I didn't want to give the wrong date. I can't find the tweet that we got either, so I'll actually, like the professional I am, I'm currently looking at Twitter just now to try and find it. So,
has the team been announced for who the game's going to be against?
No, not yet. Hopefully it does, but in the near future, and hopefully it's a side of a fair stature as well. It would maybe bring some fans down of their own, assuming it will be an English side.
Yeah.
Just a last one before we go off for this week. The Podcast Predictor League got a great number of sign-ups. Absolutely delighted that we've been able to upgrade our SoundCloud through the support of the listeners. It's much, much appreciated. We've now got unlimited storage space for the remainder of this season and right up till next August, actually. So we'll continue to push on. And Jay, it was all your fault, wasn't it, that we're waiting to the Wednesday night to record?
No.
No, it was very much a one-off, that. As I say, we had a few technical issues, but we're all sorted now, and we'll be back from next Monday. Chris, I'm just about to find this tweet, so we're not going... We're not going just yet.
Well, one other thing I was just going to add, guys. I know it wasn't really picked up on either the club's highlights, or on the BBC Woolites, as they pretty much were. But the Marvin Johnson throw-in incident that just everyone's kind of glossed over, obviously you were there, Andy. What was your take on that?
I thought it was absolutely nuts. Inverness kicked the ball out to make a sub. Johnson didn't have to give the ball back. He was perfectly within his rights to go through. The referee didn't handle it particularly well either. The players were almost running over the top of him to get to Johnson. But I think that
whole sort of 5 minute bit where, you know, Warden and Pirro went off injured, it was just an absolute shambles because you had Gary Warden waiting at the side of the pitch for ages for the medics to come over. They brought over some Lego wheelbarrow kind of thing, and then just as they're bringing them behind the goals, they end up tipping him out of it with his broken leg. Meanwhile, all the Inverness defence are trying to square up to Marvin Johnson for going through and goal when he had every right to do so. It was just absolutely bizarre.
I thought towards the end, though, that Johnson maybe realised the backlash he was going to get, and he didn't seem to put his head up to put the ball in the bottom corner. I thought he did actually almost deliberately play it away due to the shouts of the Inverness players. But for the next 5-10 minutes after that as well, he was a marked man. They were really going out their way to, and they could have done him serious damage. The Inverness players handled it really, really badly, but it was all started by, as you say, the ineptitude of the medical staff at Inverness not having a stretcher close by. Mm. And then to bring him round and drop him in the trackside as well.
Oh, a bit mad. I think as well, you know, just when you're saying about Johnson being a marked man as well, although on the highlights it looks like a stonewall penalty for the boy pushing Johnson over, from the angle that we had behind the goals, it looked like he was barely even touched. It looked as if he just flung himself to the ground because he knew that he'd maybe took the ball that wee bit too far. So I think, you know, if they'd focused more than that on the highlights and had shown that, it could have maybe put Johnson as a marked man for the coming games and for the rest of the season as a bit of a dive merchant and a niggle merchant as well.
Although I would prefer to focus on his wee bits of skill to win the penalty, though. It was absolutely superb.
Definitely, that wee twice turn to get away from the left back, and then I think if he squares it or even just has the shot, you know, that's what you're hoping for. You don't want to see him going down like he went down. And obviously, you know, we've missed the penalty and the opportunities went away. But just some of his touches in that first half, him and Fletcher, they just looked really, they looked like they were gelling quite well together. And also, as well, I know I'm going on a wee bit, sorry guys, I was watching the under-20s highlights yesterday for the Ross County game. And for the Ross County guys, you know, that are looking to make it through into the Ross County first team, the amount of space and the amount of backing off that they did by Ainsworth and Thomas in that game, they just absolutely ran riot. You know, it was 4-2 going on about 14-2, with two of them just absolutely ripping it up. And I think it was the only good that Ainsworth was getting that run out in the under-20s, because if you can show that kind of, you know, level of intensity and the confidence that he showed in that game, whenever he comes back into the side, between him and Johnson, the defences in the SPFL are going to get a torrid time off him this season.
Jay, that's a really good point by Chris there as well, isn't it? Lionel Ainsworth, we did talk privately about that and said that we didn't think he would really fancy his trip up to Dingwall on a Tuesday afternoon, but fair play to him for putting in a good performance, and it bodes well for the Hearts game a week on Wednesday where he'll obviously be back in the side.
Definitely. I mean, he can be really frustrating. Obviously, we spoke about it a few times last season in the podcast. You know, a few games in particular, Ainsworth was just really, really frustrating, didn't seem interested. But sometimes you do just get players that are really difficult like that, and it just, a manager who gets it, or, you know, for whatever reason, it just works between them. So it could just be that Barraclough knows, you know, what buttons to push, knows how to get the best out of Ainsworth. And if he can do, then, you know, fantastic, because on his day, Ainsworth is one of, if not the best winger in the top division in Scotland. He's phenomenal, as he's shown against Rangers, you know, in both games, and as he's shown in spells. So if he can play on a consistent level and play, you know, at a top level every week, then you know, he'll be a fantastic player for us next season, and then we'll probably sell him because he would earn a move to a far bigger club.
Guys, I think that's about it for this week. As I say, we'll be back on Monday with Steelman Online head honcho Ian Buchanan, so we look forward to that one. Chris, good luck come October, mate, and thanks very much for joining us. I hope we can do it again soon.
Yep, anytime, guys. I appreciate being able to actually talk about Scottish football with folk. I've encountered in the year that I've been over here, no one has a local team. Everyone supports like Man United, Chelsea, City, Arsenal. So even, you know, try to get to talk to people about the likes of Linfield, Glentoran, Cliftonville, that kind of thing. Apart from my mate Michael Hegney, who's a big Cliftonville fan, I've had barely any chat about football that I actually enjoy. So it's been good catching up with you guys and talking about the team that I love.
Jay, thanks as always, mate.
Cheers, and the testimonial is the fifth, just to put you at your misery, searching for that tweet.
Yes, Saturday the 5th of September, get along to Firth Park and celebrate a great servant of Motherwell Football Club. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.